podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
So, a couple of people that we really wanted to speak to when we were putting this little plan together to work with ex-Giants and other people involved in ice hockey throughout the UK was none other than Mr. Adam Keith. And we've got him tonight. Obviously, it's been a great couple of weeks for you, Adam.
Well, ever since the league took the decision to shut down, pretty much been in isolation, aside from a few essential trips. Aside from that, just kind of working from home and making my phone calls to the players. It was pretty abrupt ending, so we had to kind of immediately change our focus to getting all the players home, which, you know, credit to Steve and Shane Johnson and the office staff for getting the players all home as quickly as possible. And basically, I think at times like this, everybody wants to be close to their families or in a place they feel comfortable. And it was important that we got the guys home as quick as possible.
Well, we want to have a conversation with you about the whole Adam Keith story. I'm taking you right to when you first got a pair of skates on as a youngster in Toronto. And do you remember those days? Do you remember back to when you really just wanted to start skating and put the gear on?
I remember bits and pieces. I think the old memory box has taken a hit since my playing days. But, you know, my father was probably the one who's responsible for my brother and my career in terms of making sure we had enough ice time and making sure that we worked covered. And, he was a guy that, you know, would get up at 5 a.m. and take us to the local arena and give the Zamboni driver a little bit of cash to kind of let us on the ice before anybody had shown up. So it was those types of mornings, early mornings, and I guess the cold days on the local pond that kind of shapes the work ethic and shapes kind of the love of the game. At the time, I wouldn't say it was a love of the game because it felt like it feels like hard work, right? So it doesn't feel like a love of the game, but you look back on those memories and it's not hard to realize where we built our foundation of hard work from anyways.
And obviously having your older brother Sheldon, he's 3 or 4 years older than yourself, and having him to chase around, whether it's chasing around the rink or chasing around the pond, that certainly puts you in good stead as well.
Yeah, certainly. I think he obviously had a 4-year head start on me because he's 4 years older, but just watching him play, and usually the way that the age groups work back home in Canada are usually every two years or so, those age groups will play on the same day. So we always pretty much played on the same teams, the same organization. So we always played on the same day or practice on the same day. And so it was basically one trip for my parents. Because of that, I always got to watch him play or watch him practice. And then obviously, like I said earlier, you know, the one-on-one stuff on the ice with my dad or on the pond, obviously it was nice to have, I guess, somebody else there with you for those skates.
Was your dad a hockey player too?
My dad actually never really played. He didn't play any, no professional or anything like that. He just kind of played, recreational hockey growing up. He was actually a basketball player and a soccer player. Amongst many other things, growing up in PEI, there's not a whole lot of local rinks, and there's not a whole lot of organization. It's much like it is here in terms of the ice. He would have had one ice pad where he grew up, and not a whole lot of leagues. So, obviously, he had a passion for the game, and put us into it once he moved to Toronto, and we're thankful for that. I think my brother would say the same, because it's given us a life in the game.
talking about, you know, growing up and starting to play hockey, what was your first hockey team?
Well, I grew up, my dad and my mother moved from Prince Edward Island to Brampton, Ontario, Canada, I think like 19 years old or 18 years old. And so that was my first hockey team, would have been in Bramalea, which is where I grew up. I played there for, I have no idea, probably 3, 4, 5 years. And then I moved to the Toronto League, which was just a bit more competitive and obviously kind of gets you noticed. And you know, you're playing against better competition, the best kids in the Toronto area.
And you talk about getting you noticed. You obviously were noticed pretty prominently because you were drafted in the second round of the OHL and went to the Sudbury Wolves. 35 out of how many kids? Because, I mean, no offense, but, you know, 35 is pretty high.
You know what? I think I owe half of that to my brother's success before me in the OHL. He was the OHL's leading scorer and rookie of the year. And I think people were maybe looking at me in hopes that I'd replicate that. So didn't quite go to plan in Sudbury. I did go there as an underage hockey player at 16 or... I probably should have spent another year in Tier 2 Junior A instead of Major Junior, but, you know, so be it. We went to Sudbury, and then I ended up getting traded to Kitchener, which is where I really, I guess, formed and found out what role and what type of player I needed to be to reach the pro levels underneath Pete DeBoer and Steve Spott in Kitchener.
Kitchener, your first full season. You get a big trophy in your hands as the champion, Memorial Cup. What's that feeling like, obviously, because you played with some really decent players in the 4 years that you spent in Kitchener as well?
Yeah, I mean, Kitchener was a great, like I said, it kind of shaped the person I am, and those coaches shaped the person and player that I am today. But the players that I played with throughout that time, I mean, some special names on there. To name a few from that Memorial Cup year would have been obviously Mike Richards, David Clarkson, Steve Eminger, Derek Roy, and Greg Campbell. I mean, there's multiple NHL players that played on that team. And just to be, I guess, I played a fourth line role on that team. Just to be, take a backseat to watch that team do what we did. Throughout the season and then into the playoffs and then obviously through the Memorial Cup, it was pretty special. No matter how big or how small a part anybody on that team was of that championship, we certainly all learned a lot from that. And it was a great team to be a part of and a great team to look back on and have some fond memories of.
18, 19, 20 years of age, playing in the OHL. Give us an insight into what that's like. How many times are you on the ice? What's your training regime? Are you working outside a lot as well?
So I'm not working, no. There's no working involved there. I think back then, players made $50 a week. So you're basically getting your gas money. You get that plus your gas money. So there's no real working. Guys are in school and they're playing hockey. So we practice around 3 o'clock every day. So everybody could go to school all day and then come to practice. Practice every single day, I'm pretty sure, with maybe the odd day off. But there wasn't many days off back then. And then you play your two games on the weekend. And that was pretty much what it was. But there's nothing like playing major junior or I'm sure junior A or junior hockey in general. I think it's kind of where guys learn to be adults and make mistakes and learn from those mistakes and grow into the pros that they ultimately become if they make professional or if they stop playing and become adults. You learn a lot of lessons in those junior years.
You talk about turning into an adult next season. You get the call for the CHL and AHL. Which way did that start out for you? Were you started like Toledo, I'm pulled up to Manitoba, or was it vice versa?
I was signed to Manitoba in that summer after my overage year in Kitchener. And then I went to Vancouver's training camp. I had a pretty good training camp there. I played in an exhibition game against San Jose. Scored as well. No big deal. But I had a good camp, and so I was sent to Manitoba there, and I had another camp in Manitoba, and then from there I got sent down to the Toledo Storm at that time, and that was a heck of an experience playing in the old Toledo Arena. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of that, but it was something like the BBT, but obviously a bit nicer than the BBT, but as small and much more crazy. In that sense, the glass was about 2 feet tall around the entire rink. It was insane and just a great experience for my first year pro, and it suited me perfectly for that year.
It's the ECHL at that stage is probably very similar to the standard in the EIHL. Is that a fair enough comment?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you look at the league, even today, I mean, most of the best players that come out of the ECHL end up being the best players in this league as well. So I think we're pretty much on par with the ECHL. We're a bit older in the sense of we get maybe some players that were a bit better than the ECHL level, but they're at the end of their career sometimes. So you get we have a mixture in our league of experience and talent, but in the ECHL you have a lot younger guys. They're probably, I would say that league's probably faster and more skilled than our league, whereas our league probably has a bit more experience.
You get the call to get up to the AHL. Do you remember where you were and what you were up to? And obviously you just are obviously excitement to getting called up to the American Hockey League.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly where I was or anything like that, but I remember I was in the middle of having a very good ECHL season. I was scoring goals, if you can believe it or not. I was hitting, obviously, and fighting. And if you, like I said, if you've heard of the Toledo Storm and their arena, it was quite the experience to be scoring and fighting every night in that building. And so when I got the call up to Manitoba, I was obviously excited. And but things had to change in the sense of my role completely changed when I went to Manitoba, and I pretty much was there to provide a spark and some energy on the fourth line in Manitoba. And thankfully I did that, and I was managed to spend the second half of the season with Manitoba.
You threw the season and the rest of the season Manitoba. The following year, again, started at Manitoba, and you head off to Grand Rapids. And you spent the next couple of seasons in Grand Rapids as well.
Yeah, so that second year I started at Vancouver's training camp again. I didn't have quite as good a training camp as I did my first year. And I was sent down to Manitoba after following the Vancouver camp, and I tore my MCL there in Manitoba at training camp, and I missed the first probably 2.5 months of that season. And when I came back, it was tough to get in the lineup, and I ended up getting traded to Grand Rapids, where I kind of found a home there for about a year and a half, and then I had a great experience there. So I was very lucky to play in Toledo, which is a great organization. Manitoba, which was an awesome organization. Obviously, it's an NHL city now. And then Grand Rapids is up right up there, especially in the American League, with one of the best organizations. So I spent some time in my first couple of years in some great professional spots.
You talk about your MCL. At that stage, you're 22, 23 years of age. That's a pretty big injury. Even, 14, 15 years ago, it's a big injury to have to battle through and get back to the rehab, to get everything back the way you want it to be. How did you find that? Because I've done it myself, and I know it's not easy.
Yeah, it was a weird one. I mean, it was about 2 months of, I was thankful to be in Manitoba for it, because, I was basically working with the athletic trainer every single day and getting back to full strength. And also, when I became close to getting to full strength, they sent me for a conditioning stint to the Victoria Salmon Kings, which is where I made my first appearance with somebody you might know, number 72, Daryl Lloyd. Played with Lloyd there in Victoria for 2 weeks. We played about, I think I ended up playing 7 games there before I went back up to Manitoba. And so that was another pretty cool experience to play in Victoria, which is a little island off the coast of BC. And obviously, the only at that point, it was the only Canadian team in the ECHL.
What was your first thoughts on Daryl Lloyd?
Wasn't actually my first experience with Lloydy, because I played youth hockey versus Lloydy my whole way growing up. And what I can tell you is the Lloydy that we all know and love, was he's been like that his entire life. From the time he was 13, when hitting was introduced to the game, he was skating like he was and finishing every hit. And I remember he was always the captain of the Don Mills Flyers. And so I always had good battles against him from the time I was probably 14 or 13, and played against him right up until the time that I played with him in Belfast. So I remember when Doug called me and told me he'd signed Daryl Lloyd, I said, well, you remember I told you I'd probably have 15 fights this year? Well, that probably went up to about 30 now because you signed that guy. So I have good memories of Lloydy, and obviously we've become good friends since playing here, and we have a lot of good memories together.
Daryl Lloyd, obviously, you know, you spent a little bit, we'll go on to talk about Daryl because he was obviously a big part of your time in Belfast, but as a player and as an opponent, he must have been a real pain in the ass to play against. Did you ever get to the possibility of 14-year-old to drop a glove for him?
Not at 14, but when he was playing in Kalamazoo, I might have chased him around the ice a few times. One time I got fed up with him and I did drop my gloves and start hitting him. One of his players ended up jumping me. So he was always the guy that you know him. He's always been that guy, and he doesn't have a stop sign. He just keeps going. So when you're playing against him, you hate him. When you're playing with him, you love him. And you know, it was something that I think if I would have had Daryl on my line my entire pro career, I probably would have reached a higher level. He was that type of player that made me a more impactful guy, and it was a great duo to have. And obviously, when you add in a guy with the brains like Mark Garside, he took care of us, and he was it was a great line to be a part of, that line for our time here in Belfast, and obviously remained good friends with both of those guys.
Well, we're going to come on, lad. Don't worry, there's plenty of time left here. You talk about dropping the gloves with Daryl, but you've played with and you've played against guys after that. I mean, for argument's sake, you played with Boris Velik, and then you met him, you put up against him when he was at Coventry. Mindset, two guys doing the same job, I mean, as friends as well, how did that come for you? Was it easy for you to, obviously you're just protecting your teammates at that stage, but it's tough to punch a friend, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I'm not going to lie and pretend like some tough guys will tell you it's just business. But, I mean, it's awkward for sure when you're up against somebody that you know and you like them. But throughout the course of a hockey game or the course of a hockey season, things are going to happen. And throughout the game, especially, that it's a man's game. I mean, you're going to have to answer for some of the things you do, and things get heated, and it doesn't change anything or doesn't take anything away from the respect for each other. You just kind of we realize that sometimes you're gonna end up clashing on the ice, and you know, and it's the same thing in practice. You've seen plenty of practice fights, And, you know, guys are competing on the ice, and sometimes things boil over and it gets handled, and then they go back to being friends and going for a pint. So it's no different in a game when you're playing against ex-teammates. You hope that you don't have to fight them, and you don't want to fight them, or you don't want to get involved in conflict with them. But throughout the course of a game, sometimes it happens.
ECHL, AHL, and obviously your time in the EIHL. Was there one person that you just hated coming up against?
Through junior, it was Cam Jansen. I never liked playing that guy. He was an animal, especially in junior. He was a men versus boys in junior, and you know, obviously I answered the bell every time I had to play him, but he certainly wasn't a fun guy to fight. He was a bit too strong for me. So when he got to Nottingham, it was nice to get him again when I was, I guess, a man. So, but he was a guy that I always had respect for, and he was well feared in junior hockey anyways, and obviously he went on to have a great pro career as well. Throughout the time there, I'd say the one guy, and there's probably many guys that put a bit of fear into me, but the one guy that sticks out is Steve McIntyre. I played against him a few times in the American League, and he might have been the one guy that when I lined up beside him, I tried to look the other way and not make eye contact. You know, he was a 6'5", 200 and I don't know how heavy he was, 240 pounds of, and he's a lefty that can knock you out. So, yeah, all the things that I did not want to go up against.
After a stint in San Antonio, you get back to Toledo. You've obviously talked about your passion about Toledo Storm, and obviously then the Walleye. You get another chance to play in front of those fans for another 50, 60 odd games.
Yeah, well, when I talk about how lucky I was as a pro, and I'm still lucky till today. You go from Toledo to Manitoba to Grand Rapids, then to San Antonio. I touched on all those other teams, but San Antonio, you know, we're talking 80 degrees and sunny, and I'm going to practice in shorts and flip-flops and playing in an NBA arena. I mean, it was a great experience as well, much different than playing in all those other cities that were hockey cities, but it was pretty fun playing in a climate like Texas as well. So I spent a year and a half there, I think, and then it was from there I actually signed, I played a couple games with Phoenix in an exhibition through there, which was a lot of fun. And then from those times, after my last season in San Antonio, I was a free agent. So I signed with the Florida Panthers as a free agent on a PTO. Pete DeBoer was my old coach there from Kitchener. And from there, I played 6 exhibition games with them, which was an amazing experience, flying around on private jets, all the road games there. And then I ended up dislocating my shoulder and having surgery on my shoulder. So I missed 6.5 months there, which is why I ended up in Toledo. Toledo, thankfully, took me in probably 2 weeks before my shoulder surgery, or I was due to recover from my shoulder surgery, 2 months before that, sorry, so I could, you know, start getting back into shape and start getting paid again, because I wasn't getting paid. So that's how I ended up back in Toledo. And at that point, Toledo had kind of, I guess, they had built a brand new arena, and they had rebranded as the Toledo Walleye. And I wasn't sure how that change was going to be, since I was there at the old arena and the Toledo Storm. But I was pleasantly surprised. The arena is beautiful, and they went from 3,500 fans to 8,200 fans. And the atmosphere changed a little bit, but it was a great one regardless. And still to this day, they're probably the best organization that I know of in the ECHL.
ECHL. AHL, you know, it's the US and Canada is a big, big place. Give us an insight into what it's like, obviously, for for traveling on a bus. I mean, you talk about, you know, taking the coach there from flying over to England and then obviously traveling 2 hours, maybe 3 hours on a coach. It really, I think all these guys that come to the UK should be well used to doing that, apart from maybe Paddy Gwynn and Jim Vandermeer. But, you know, you've got all these guys that come in from the ECHL. They're used to this traveling. They're used to doing what they do in the States. And but how tough is that on the body as well?
You know what? We don't know at that time. You know, you've already been through junior. Whether or not it's major junior or just junior or college, guys are used to the bus and they're used to the travel. You just get on with it. My second stint with Toledo and with Grand Rapids there, both because I had two stints with both of those clubs. They had sleeper buses on the second stint, where you get into your bunk and basically have your own little TV or your laptop or whatever you have, and you watch a few shows and you fall asleep and you wake up and you're on 8 hours later, you're in a completely different state and you wake up and you go for breakfast and then you go for pregame skate and you play your game. So while it might sound crazy, I didn't mind it at all. You know, at least the times I had a sleeper bus, because you get your own little bed and it wasn't a big deal to me. So if you can imagine, when I was coming over here to Belfast, Doug told me we probably have the worst travel in the league. I just want to pre-warn you on that. So when I came here and basically saw that our travel was not that bad at all, our worst travel is probably a ferry and a bus ride to Fife or Dundee, which would be about a 2.5 hour ferry, and then a 3.5 hour bus ride. It's nothing compared to, you know, I think we used to do 8 to 10 hour bus trips overnight with Toledo and Grand Rapids.
That call from Doug in 2011, was there anybody else interested in signing you?
Toledo, and that's about it. No, I was actually in the process of signing back with Grand Rapids that summer, and the GM was fired by Detroit, and Detroit decided they didn't want me back, so I ended up with no job late in the summer, and I was planning on signing back into Toledo, which I would have been perfectly fine with, because I love Toledo. I love the city, I love the organization, I love the coaching staff. I was very happy there. That being said, when I got the message from Doug about Belfast, I do have some Irish heritage and just a place that I'd always wanted to visit. And obviously I'd heard about Theo Fleury, his experience over here. And it just seemed at the time I was kind of a bit irritated with my situation with Grand Rapids. And I think that at that point, I remember to reaching out to my coach in Toledo, Nick Fattuzzi, and telling him that I'm going to go over to the UK league and play for the Belfast Giants. And I remember his words to me were, you should absolutely do it, and it's great for it'd be a great experience, but make sure you come back here the next year. And that's something I planned on doing that. I planned on finishing my career in Toledo. That's how much I loved it there. And I love the coaching staff, the organization, and the city. But when I got here, after my first year here, it was tough to leave.
Your first year, you come up with 13 league goals. What's that all about?
Well, if you go back to my first year pro in Toledo, I think I was on pace for 20, 30 goals. So, you know, back in the day, I used to be able to score when I was about 6 or 7 years old. So there was somewhere, it was there at some point, but it was certainly never the forefront of my mind for what I thought I brought to a hockey team.
All right, let's get on to the Belfast Giants story for it. Obviously, you played for the guts of, well, you played for 7 full seasons, and then the first one, you win a trophy, elite league champion. You start that reconnection again with Daryl Lloyd.
what's your, I mean, obviously you've got to have a couple of funny stories about Darragh Lloyd in Belfast, like.
Well, I'm not sure I could tell them on this podcast, but there's a lot of funny Darragh Lloyd stories. I would say mainly just he was a constant. The reason why the fans loved him is probably the reason why his teammates loved him on the ice. Is you're always entertained watching him from the bench. You're always entertained being on the ice with him. And I remember probably half the time I was on the ice, I spent watching Loiter just to make sure that he wasn't getting jumped for something he did. So. I always had to have an eye on the puck and an eye on Lloydie to make sure that nobody was getting after him. So it was good fun, and obviously off the ice, we had a lot of fun as well.
You talk about the standard in the AHL 2001, the Giants' two top points was Craig Peacock and Robert Guy. What was your view on the standard of the GB players or the Brits at that point, obviously in the position that you are now as an assistant coach, was your view back then they were better than what you thought they were going to be?
Well, my view is like the top level British player is a great hockey player, and they're very capable of playing at the ECHL level, probably even the American League level, as a few of them have proved. Obviously it's a bit harder because you got to go there and you got to pay your dues like North Americans do through the ECHL level, and it's never easy there because there's a lot of hockey players. You end up getting healthy scratch and having to wait for your opportunity to get in the lineup, so it's tough to make a living. It's tough to climb the ladder over there in North America. But you know, when you come here and you see the players, the top level British player is not that far off, or not far off, or is on par with the players in the ECHL level. So I wasn't surprised when I seen the likes of our British players here in Belfast, and obviously the other top players in around the league. They were as good as imports, and which is why you seen probably, I guess, the separation between the teams that had all those top British players back then, and there was obviously less imports to go around back then as well. So there was a real separation from the top three, four teams to the bottom teams.
Talk us through your first season and coming out with that trophy.
Well, I think first and foremost, I got to hand a lot of credit to Doug Christensen for just making the team understand, as a lot of new players, there are a lot of North American players, making the team understand what this league is all about. Because you know, back home or anywhere else in the world, you're just trying to make the playoffs, and then you're trying to play well going into the playoffs, so you have a good playoffs to try to win the trophy. Whereas here in the UK, you're fighting all year long for first place, so. As players, they come in and sometimes think a game in September is not that important, or a game in October, if you lose, it's not that big a deal. But as a coaching staff, and certainly since I've become a coach, you really learn that those are some of the biggest fights that are the biggest obstacles you have with a team, is trying to get the entire team to kind of realize that we're in playoffs here year round. And as uncomfortable as that may feel, it's the team that figures it out first that finds that consistency throughout the season. Whoever figures it out the most is obviously going to, at the end of the year, they're going to be league champions. So I thought Doug Christensen did a good job from my own personal memories of making us aware that what we needed to do to win the league and how important the league was. And it wasn't easy, and there was a lot of trying times throughout that. But the core group of players that we had there, that team is probably the reason that I'm still here today. Just my experience with that team, It was so much fun, and to be rewarded at the end of the year with a league trophy, it felt awesome. And I learned a lot of things that year about myself and how to be a winner. That's probably the reason why I keep wanting to be here and keep chasing trophies. Obviously, my second year, I met my wife, and that's the main reason why I'm here full time. But certainly, second is the Belfast Giants, and like I said, that first year is responsible for setting me up, I guess, for wanting to be a Giant for life.
There's always characters in every dressing room, every single season. Your second year in Belfast, you're the leader of the group. You're handed the captaincy. And then your teammates like Davey Phillips, Colin Sheehan in Belfast again after a couple of years away. Kevin Surratt joins midway through the year as well. But what's your first thoughts on that crazy horse, Davey Phillips?
Yeah, he's one of a kind, that's for sure. Dave I actually had Davey as a teammate in Toledo, if you believe it or not. So Davey's one of those guys who signed in the American League, and he played a good number of games in the American League as well. So, you know, me going back to saying the British players are able to play in the ECHL and the American League, it's just obviously a lot harder because there's a lot more hockey players over there. So, but I did play with Davey in North America. And then when Davey came back here, he was great for us. He was a real character in the room that kind of brings everybody together. And in times when maybe throughout the season, guys kind of can get just, you know, down or just bored or tired or whatever it may be, Davey's the guy that can bring out a good laugh out of the team and remind everybody that this is a game and we're playing for fun here. So he really lightened the load in the room. And obviously, if you watch him play, he's willing to put his body on the line for the team. And so he was a great character, but certainly he's one of a kind in terms of personalities that I've ever met.
You win the conference that year. And, you know, you talk about teammates that, you know, you make friendships for life. When you win championships, you've it's family. But one of the guys I've always heard you speaking very fondly of over the years in Belfast is Kevin Surratt.
Yeah, I still pretty close with Sauce, and obviously, you know what, when he left here, I didn't like the way that he left because he was injured the year before and he had a tough year. And I wanted him back for another season. His body wasn't holding up, and so when he left, you kind of wish him all the success in the future. And obviously, I kept in touch with Sauce, and I, you know, one of the things you usually say to people, and it does seem to ring true for the most part. Good people land on their feet. And Sauce is a good person, and he certainly has landed on his feet and is now the commissioner of the Manitoba Junior Hockey League, and he's going to do a great job there. And I don't see this as being his last step in the ladder of hockey. I think he's going to continue to climb, and I don't think you've heard the last of Kevin Surratt.
Next season, another championship. Another league title. Paul Leary coming to Belfast for the first time one season. What was Paul Leary like in the room and as a coach?
Joel, first of all, just to finish on that second season, I think that second season, just going back to Kevin Surratt, he was probably the MVP of the league that year with his character and his passion. But that year, had Nottingham not had the team they had, I think we would have won everything. Nottingham had brought in a couple pieces that kind of put them over the top, and we had trouble kind of beating them. And they won the triple that year, and I think we were second to them in pretty much everything. So that was a tough year to take, and it certainly set us up for success in that third year under Paul Adey, which when Paul came in,
I think Paul was just kind of a calming influence on us. He was very calm and collected, and he let the players play. He didn't change a whole lot. He set lines from the start of the year. He set systems in place from the start of the year, and he let the players go. And he probably had and he may disagree, but maybe the easiest year as a coach somebody may ever have had, because that team was so good and we just kept going. And it felt like, as a player, that we never really ran into any adversity until the playoffs. I think we seemed to not get many injuries, and we obviously, in terms of the league, we kind of ran away with that. But you know, the Challenge Cup preceded us, and as did the playoffs. So it wasn't a perfect season by any means. And I'm sure if I talked to Paul, he'd probably say, you may have thought that was an easy year, but you guys were a handful to deal with. So who knows? But that was a great hockey team, obviously. I think anytime you win the league in February, it's a very good hockey team.
You talk about that year, you know, Kevin Surratt, Dustin White, Cotton, Evan Chevrolet, or Chevin Everett, as I used to call him. You know, Robbie Sandrock is here at the time. Your good friend Jeff Mason, Calvin Elfring. But one of the guys that you played with back in Kitchener turned up back in Belfast again, and Jeff Swayze. What was Swayze like as a junior player?
I only played with Swayze his overage year, so he was 20 and I was 17. I played with him for half a season, so I didn't get to know him a lot, but he was pretty much like he was the rest of his pro career. He was like a men versus boys. He was just a big body that skated well, controlled the puck well. He had that finishing touch. He could make plays. He was tough. He was physical when he needed to be. So you could tell that he was going to go on and have a good pro career, and he was going through his pro career as I was there later, a couple years later, and so I was following him quite closely, and he's certainly a player that had one or two things been a little bit different in his career path. He certainly would end up in the NHL. I think he was that good, and I guess thankfully for Belfast's sake, he ended up in Belfast, and it was a big part of that championship there.
Derek Walzer comes into Belfast. You threw a couple of seasons. Probably, is it fair to say you underachieved? Not personally, but as a group, you underachieved for a couple of seasons that maybe say between 2014 and 2017?
Well, you skipped one. You skipped Steve Thornton's year.
Oh, I sure did. That's right. Forgot about him.
Yeah, so I think that Paul 80 year, I think everything had kind of went so easy for us that we had kind of, I shouldn't say easy for us because we only won one of the three trophies, but in terms of the league, it went pretty well for us. And we didn't change a whole lot going into the second season. We had some key injuries early on there, and some things didn't go well for us. So it was that year under Steve was a tough one, and I touched base with Steve throughout the entire year, just on the whole struggle that we were having. And you fell for Steve in that year as well, coming in and having your general manager leave, and Todd Kelman, to go to your one of your rivals, and basically leaving Steve to take over the entire reins, not just being the coach, but also having to be the general manager and learn on the job. It was a tough year for Steve, but I thought he did a great job. I think we were a couple injuries away from being where we needed to be that year. At the same time, I think we had a great core group throughout those 3 years previously that was all getting older. And I'm the first person to admit that, I think, because I was part of it. And, you know, when we're all having fun and we're a good core, at the same time, you're getting older and your body's failing you a little bit. So you're getting a little bit worse every year. And I think that all kind of came to fruition in that year. And I think you've seen some turnover in the years following that. And
that's probably as a result of that season, I think. That's it.
Derek Walzer comes in, as I say. He gets you on board as a player assistant coach. Makes a couple of other moves throughout the year. Again, injuries throughout the year. Ended up with your line mate having to go back on defense as well. And he's done a pretty good job, hasn't he?
Yeah. Who knew Gary would play with me and Lawyer and then end up a defenseman? No, I think with Walser coming in, he was a high pedigree kind of guy, a great defenseman that was going to come in and run the team. And not to say that Steve couldn't have come in and done a great job as well, but I think Steve was obviously focusing on being a general manager and wanting to bring in a new coach to take over the reins. And he certainly got a great player and one of the best players maybe we've seen, or especially one of the best defensemen that we've seen in Derek Walser. I don't think we got to see the best Derek Walser as a hockey player, because something I've learned since I've started coaching is it's a lot of work, and whether or not it's physically or mentally, but I couldn't imagine being a player as well as doing this job. So that's kudos to Derek for doing the job that he did on the ice and off the ice. And obviously he's gone on to have a pretty good career in the OHL. So, but that's that season there. I think, again, we were in the fight, but didn't win anything. And you know, in a tough environment like Belfast, we judge our seasons on winning trophies. And although we thought we were in the fight for those 2 years, we ultimately didn't win anything. And but we were certainly, you know, right there for those trophies right to the end. And again, a lot of good times and a lot of good memories there, and a lot of good lessons as well.
You talk about your transition from player to coach. The relationships that you have from teammates to basically your boss, how difficult did you find that transition?
Well, my first year coaching, I had quite a few players that I'd played with on the team. And, you know, I guess it's not ideal to have players you played with on your team that you're supposedly coaching, but becoming a new coach as a rookie coach, I thought that it really helped me transition into that role. And having leaders like Blair O'Reilly and Jim Vandermeer, amongst many other guys, you know, you speak about my old line mate, Mark Garside, and what a job he's done. And obviously Stephen Murphy, guys I've played with for many years, just to kind of know me and be able to tell the players what type of person I am. And, you know, cause there's a lot of things that go on throughout a year that, if the player doesn't know you, maybe they perceive things a little bit different. So I thought that having those players in place to kind of be the go-between between me and the new players certainly allowed us all to build a better relationship together.
Looking at some of the players that you brought in that year, you know, individually, it was, you know, some really talented players. You talk about Sebastian Sylvester, Brendan Connolly, Spiro Lacoste, Darcy Murphy, and obviously one of the ones that stands out for me as being top notch in the time that he spent in Belfast with Steve Saviano. But putting that group together and going down the line and, you know, doing all that traveling and coming out with a trophy, as in the Challenge Cup, and a trophy that eluded you for during your playing career. Against all odds, I'm sure as a coach and as a person as I know you are, and you try and play it down, but that must have felt great.
Yeah, no, it certainly did feel good, especially it being the Challenge Cup that, like you just said there, it eluded me as a player in a lot of heartbreaks in terms of going up into the second leg, up a few goals and losing the lead to drop that. I think that was in that third season there when we'd won the league in February. I think we lost a 3-goal lead in Nottingham. A tough lesson learned by us. And so to finally get our hands on the Challenge Cup, it did feel special. And more so, I think, as a coach, you're just proud of your group and really happy for them because, you know, it means a lot of their dedication, a lot of their efforts throughout the entire season pays off. And also, as a fan base, you know, we had three or four years of no trophies. And so it was nice to see the fan base, especially the ones who made it to Cardiff. We got to see the immediate reaction, and that was nice to see. And then obviously when we got home, to see all the fans at the airport, and obviously the home reception we got was pretty special.
2018-2019 season, within the Challenge Cup, you get the opportunity to play the European competition. Two tough weekends, you know, you've got to play a lot of hockey in such a short space of time. And that Continental Cup final, the width of a post, that's literally that's what it was from being a European champion.
Yeah, you look back at last season, and this is kind of the reason why I say, you know, Paul Adey would probably say that, well, it wasn't all daisies that year, because last year we had a lot of not problems, but inconsistencies where you were wondering where we're going to win the league and all those things that would have irritated you had we not won the league. But looking back on the entire thing as a whole, you know, we were basically a post and a goal away from doing the clean sweep in Europe and domestically. So it was a pretty special season. I think probably hard to argue, probably the best season the Belfast Giants have ever had in terms of success. And it was a pretty special one to be a part of. And again, being my second season as a coach, a lot of good lessons learned from both failure and from success as well. You know, there's good lessons learned there.
I was lucky enough to be calling the game against Ireland from the media box. And, you know, I think it's fair to say I went a bit nuts when Dustin Johnson scored that game time goal. And I remember looking across the bench. And that's as excited as I've seen you on a bench. At that, you know, obviously they being 3-0 down, they get it back to 2-2. What was that feeling like, coach? What was it feeling like as leading those players and obviously trying to get the winner heading down in the last few minutes of that game?
Yeah, well, it felt like the first period we came out and we played well in that game, but if I'm mistaken, I think we were down 2-0 at the end of that period, or maybe just 1-0. I'm not sure, but just felt like they scored against the run of play in the first period and kind of took the wind out of our sails. And then the second period, they took it to us, and Besko kept us in that game. So when we went in for the period break between the second and the third, it was all about the belief in that dressing room. The players believed that they could get it done, and the coaching staff believed that they could get it done as well. And we had nothing to lose, being down to nothing, going into a period like that. And to see the first one go in and then to see Dustin Johnson tie it up, it was probably, if I'm honest, you know, and I'm not sure if it's because of my bad memory or not, but maybe certainly one of my best memories as a Giant, if not the best. And that's tough to say because we've had some real good memories there. I'd say if you were going to hold me down and ask for one, it would probably be the night that we beat Sheffield in the back-to-back in my first season and won the league. That was probably my best memory. And I would say that Dustin Johnson's goal in that whole game was probably my second best. And that's funny because it's coming in a loss. So despite that loss, the effort and the comeback by the players was inspiring.
You talk about that loss. Was that a instrumental moment as well, pushing on down the season? Obviously, you winning and retaining the Challenge Cup, and then the form that you had going in down the stretch in the league as well, and we all know what happened in the league with the Ben Lake goal technically in the hotel.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it's certainly something the coaching staff tried to draw on as an experience and a reason why we're going to win the league. We tried to use that experience and that. That Continental Cup defeat was pretty painful for the group to accept, and obviously as a coach going into that room after and just seeing the. Just the pain on everybody's face, and it was just not a great feeling in the dressing room. And we wanted to make sure that we corrected that the rest of the year, and to see it pay off at the very last day of the season. I just watched somebody just shared the video of everybody celebrating in the hotel bar and at the what was it called there?
Crown Plaza.
Crown Plaza. That was a pretty special moment, and what a way to win it with your fan base that deserves it as well. So that certainly capped off a great season there, and then obviously we went into playoffs and we had a bit more heartache. So, but as a whole, when you look back, it was an unbelievable year and a great experience, and again, friends made for life.
We moved into this season. You started off with CHLA. And your second European competition as a head coach, but reaching the top level of ice hockey in the CHL, European hockey side, hockey-wise, you must have felt pretty decent with yourself and Jeff Mason and Rob Shure beside you going on to the bench for that first game against the Brits.
Yeah, well, just actually, I mean, you touched on Rob Stewart, and he's obviously been with me since I've been playing here and been coaching here, and he's been a massive help to me in my transition into a coach, and just a great sounding board, and I guess a man full of knowledge of the game and experience in the game and both sides of it. So he's been a massive influence on me, and then this season to have Jeff Mason jump on board as a coach, he was tremendous this season. I thought he really took ownership of his role, and I thought he was great for me this season and great for the players, and he did a great job. So it was great to have those two guys alongside me this season. To answer your question, though, going into the Champions League, just excitement. I think it was our first time as an organization being involved in it, and you could sense the excitement amongst the fans and the players and the coaching staff and the management, and everybody involved was excited to get going. And you could obviously see that in the first weekend at home, the way the players performed.
This past season, I know we finished abruptly. It is pretty fair to say that the most common word that you've used throughout the year is consistent.
Yeah, I think if we had found some consistency, we would have been right there at the time of the league closure. But we were inconsistent for pretty much the entire season. And it was pretty special that I guess we were still in the fight at the end of the season. So that kind of gives way to how much parity there was in the league this season that everybody seemed to be losing. I think that you would have seen the number of points that took to win the league significantly would have went down this season. And it would have been one heck of a finish with the last 6 to 8 games left for everybody with the way that Coventry was playing and Obviously, Sheffield was very dangerous this year, and Nottingham was a very dangerous team. So it would have been nice to see how we would have fared our last two home games versus Nottingham, and then we had two more versus Fife, and you know anything could have happened, and it would have been nice to see it all play out. There was a couple times there in the last month that our team showed some fight back in the third period. That good teams, that's what they do. If they come in and they have a bad opening 40 minutes, in the third period they come back and they find a way to win that game. And it did seem like the last month we were starting to find ways to come back into games and starting to build that belief. And that's what you need. And it would have been nice to see us finish out the season and see where we could have gotten in the league and then obviously into the playoffs.
That's, we've talked about the chance as a coach. We've talked about chance as a player. But as an individual, from a personal point of view, if you had to pick up a line of players that you played with, I'm not asking you to do the ones you've been playing as a coach, but playing with over your time in Belfast, who would you pick? Let's start with a goaltender. Actually, that's either Stephen Murphy and Andrew Dixon.
Yeah, so you'd have to go with those two, I think. You know, what Murph has done for the organization over his time here is pretty special. And the first British goalie to win the league, all those things that happened throughout his time here was pretty special. Obviously, I had a great relationship with him. So he would certainly be the starter, and you can't go look farther than Andrew Dixon as your backup of, you know, the local Northern Irish kid who's taught me all the tricks of the trade and still remain good friends till today. And on forward, as much as I'd like to say some of the best players I've played with in terms of, you know, the Kevin Surrettes, the Paddy Dwyers, I might never play with Paddy, but, you know, there was multiple good players that came through Belfast. I'd have to go with the white line, the original white line of me, Daryl Lloyd, and Mark Garside. If I'm thinking back to the defensemen, I'd have to go with Robbie Sandrock and Jeremy Rebick as my two defensemen that I'd want on my line. Two guys that were great leaders and great teammates throughout my time as a player. And obviously, Jeremy Rebick being the captain my first year, I learned a lot about being a leader and just about being a better human from Jeremy and his family.
You've talked about your success as a player, and obviously, you know, Doug Christensen was a big part of that, is bringing you in and winning your first season. Three Elite League championships as a player, obviously. Is there anything that you look back on your time as a Giant or as a hockey player and have any regrets?
As a Giant hockey player?
No. As a hockey player, forget about your coaching career, but as a player, is there anything you look back on and you just went, maybe you've done that or had just done this?
Not really. I mean, I thought my first year of junior, I played underage, so I played as a 16-year-old in the OHL, which I got limited ice time, and I pretty much just fought whenever I could. I thought that year I could have spent Tier 2 Junior A, which means I would have played a regular shift and played all situations. I thought that year meant I lost a crucial year of development, which could have helped me going forward. But again, that's just me hoping that could have made a difference. Certainly, I have no regrets in the way my career has played out, and it certainly led me to Belfast and a great career post-playing in Belfast, and I couldn't ask for anything more.
You've talked about your dad, you've talked about your brother, obviously as role models for yourself. Anybody else that stands out for you you want to try and emulate or take a lot of stuff from them into your coaching career?
My junior coach, Peter DeBoer, I thought he was the guy that really had a lot of say in the way that I developed as a hockey player and as a person, and certainly taught me a lot of quality lessons that I take with me still to today. So Pete, I owe a lot to Pete DeBoer, and a guy I still follow and have enjoyed watching his career and his career path to the NHL. Aside from that, obviously, the main guy that I lean on would be my brother, and the path that he's taken as a player to the NHL, and being a small guy to make it to the NHL at the time that he did was pretty special. And then to get his career cut short at the age of 25, and then to make it back to the NHL at 38 years old is pretty special. So I don't need to look any further than him for inspiration.
2020-2021 season, you've already touched on at the top of the chat about, looking forward to, we just don't know what's going to happen here in the next, few months with the coronavirus, but how's your preparations going for that? Because obviously you're looking ahead.
Yeah, I mean, obviously things are very uncertain right now, and that's just normal, I think, with the certain situation that we're in. But we have no choice but to proceed as normal and try to build a hockey team that's going to have success in next season's Elite League.
Well, I think that's just wrapped everything up for us, Adam. And look, I know you're having a bit of isolation time to yourself at the minute. And, we just hope that everything pans out as quickly as possible and everybody's safe. And I really want to thank you for your time tonight. I've taken up probably far too much of it at the minute as it stands.
No, thank you, guys. It's obviously get my head off this little, this big pandemic that we got going on. But certainly want to express to the fans that we're right there with you. And everybody stay safe and take care of themselves. And we look forward to seeing you guys for the new season in 2021. And hopefully we're all back to normal and enjoying our ice hockey.
Well, that would be the end of it, only I'm in a complete and utter turban over here about Team GB. So we'll edit this bit in. I'll get Davey and Pat this bit in for it. Team GB, how did that come about? Did Peter Russell just reach out to you after your first year of first start as the head coach in Belfast Giants?
Yeah, it was my first year as a coach, and I'd obviously met Pete from coaching against him with Milton Keynes. And then about halfway through that season, he reached out and we just started chatting back and forth. And from there, it kind of lent into, do you want to be part of the GB national team and assistant coach? I think that him having two players that I've played with and coached in being Matt Nickerson and Jonathan Boxall, I think I've obviously been speaking with them as well in terms of the type of person and player that I was. So I think that right from the start, me and Pete kind of hit it off, and certainly as a young rookie coach, I certainly wanted to learn from a guy who's been coaching for a while, and the opportunity to be a part of the GB national team was pretty special, and the run that they've been on, it was nice to be a part of that as well.
Your first year, World Championship, pool two, basically, or pool one, double A, or whatever it was, and you end up with a gold medal in that game, which I was lucky enough to get there, and coming out with that gold medal like France in overtime was just absolutely sensational.
Yeah, that was there was a lot that kind of went into that tournament, and then obviously throughout the tournament it was a long one and a tough one, facing the teams that we were facing. We went through a lot of trying times throughout that tournament. So to see it come down to that final game that we probably we would be lying if we say we didn't think that it would come down to that final game. We did know that we wanted to keep building to that. As Pete called it, the peak end. We wanted to peak at that at the end of that tournament, and we wanted to use all the experience that we got throughout that tournament, whether it was the losses or the narrow defeats and everything that we learned throughout that, and just trying to get ourselves up to pace at the end of the tournament. And the way that that final game went, from the timeout to clawing back three goals and then going into overtime and winning it, was pretty special. And very happy for that group of players and everybody before them as well. I mean, obviously, I've been here for a long time now in this league, and have played with a lot of players that have been through the program, and knowing what it means to them, I was very happy to be a part of that and to see them remain up in the pool that I feel that they believe or they belong to be in. Obviously, this year we don't get to be a part of that with the cancellation, but they remain up there for the following year's World Championships. So here's hoping that we can remain again.
Just one final thing. You're playing Team Canada. O Canada comes on. Are you singing the national anthem?
I wasn't. I actually don't even know if I was or not, but I don't think I was. No, you know, I mean, you're part of a team, and you're focused on the moment. Although being against Team Canada, it was pretty surreal. And to look over at Alain Vigneault and Kirk Muller, and see the coaches we were coaching against, and then the players that were on the ice, it was pretty special. I think it was a cool experience despite the loss. And that's one of the disappointing things of this one being canceled. We obviously would have had the exhibition game against Canada, and then another game against Canada in the tournament. So, hopefully we draw them again in a year's time.
Right, we'll just finish this off again. I'll get David to add it up. Adam, again, thanks very much for your time tonight. I know it's been a frustrating couple of weeks for you, and obviously stuck at home and a bit like myself, not being out and about. So hopefully I haven't taken up too much of your time, and we'll look forward to seeing you.
Not at all, Simon. Happy to join View from the Bridge and obviously get my mind off everything that's going on and kill an hour of my time here. So thank you for the call. To all the Giants fans, take care of yourselves. Stay safe. And we'll see you at the new season, and hopefully we can be back to better times there, and looking forward to another winning season.
Sports Social Podcast Network.